Okay, perfect. Okay, vision for you, chapter 11, page 151. It says, for normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It's a joyous intimacy with friends, a feeling that life is going good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone, they were but memories. And I highlighted from never could be recaptured to the end of that paragraph. It tells you that you could never recapture because you've got an allergy to alcohol that we're stuck with for life, right? Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was that insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession, an underlying obsession, because that's the third and final time that we talk about it in the book. A heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control will enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. And next to that, I just wrote step one, because we tried and we kept trying. And if we don't understand the steps, the step one promises we will relapse. The less people tolerate us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. And I highlighted this whole paragraph, to be honest. You can highlight the whole paragraph, because again, it's quite prevalent. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, because alcohol was our master, right? We were powerless over it. Shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that his loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Which means our drinking got worse. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval, which would be another drunk in a bar. Momentarily, we did. Then would come oblivion, and the awful waiting to face the hideous four horsemen that underlined this terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. Why did I keep doing it? How did I get like that? The frustration, the fear that comes with that. Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand. Now and then, a serious drinker, being dry at the moment. I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time. And I highlighted now from as ex-problem drinkers all the way down the whole next page and the top of the paragraph of 153. So it's all of 152 and the top paragraph of 153. You could just circle around if you like. As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in his dark to keep up his spirits. That's the delusion that it's going to be all right, on our illusion. We spoke about that on page 30, right? He fools himself inwardly. He would give anything to take half a dozen drinks and get away with it, underlined it. The great obsession. We want just half a dozen drinks and that would be that, right? He will presently try the old game, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. He cannot picture life with alcohol, and someday he will be able to manage life either with alcohol or without it. He will then add low loneliness as such view, and underline this, he will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. That means we've got no way out. All right? We have shown how we got up for you from under. You say, yes, I am willing, but am I to be consigned to be alive? Well, I should be stupid, raw, and a glove. Like some righteous people I see with a question mark. And that's not my experience. I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute. And it's vastly more than that. It's a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, people say that the fellowship can't keep you sober. But in tradition five, we have one primary purpose in tradition five, and that's to carry the message of AA to the newcomer. All right. So when they talk about AA as a substitute, we're there to carry a message to you guys, right? There you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. And I underline these next five words. Your imagination will be fired. Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lie ahead. Thus we find a fellowship, and so will you. How is that to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You're going to meet these new friends in your own community, near you. Alcoholics are dying helplessly, like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there will be hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I underline this, among them, you will make lifelong friends, which is exactly what I've made in the fellowship of AA and this meeting, lifelong friends, right? You will be bound to them with a new and wonderful ties, for you will escape disaster together. Underline, we escape disaster together. And you will commence shoulder to shoulder on your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn to live, learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. Step 12, right? It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness with a question mark? And next out, I wrote page 28, I put a design for living. Because we have a design for living that works in rough going, right? We have a way out. The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you, should you wish them above all else. And be willing to make use of our experience. We are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us, and underline this, our own recovery proves that. Okay. Our hope is when this chip of a book is launched on a worldwide tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach two other sick ones, and a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous may spring up in each city, hamlet, havens for those who, underline this, must find a way out. We must, or it kills us. In the chapter Working with Others, you gathered an idea of how we approach and aid others to health. Suppose now that you have several families that have adopted this way of life, you want to know more about how to proceed from that point. Perhaps the best way of treating you to a glimpse of your future will be to describe the growth of the fellowship among us. And here's a brief account. And this is about Bill Wilson going to Act One, right? It says, years ago in 1935, one of our number, Bill Wilson, made a journey to a certain western city, which is Akron, Ohio. From a business standpoint, his trip came off badly. Had he been successful in his enterprise, he would have been set on his feet financially, which at the time seemed vitally important. So if Bill Wilson's business deal didn't fall through, we wouldn't be here. It's only because it fell through in Akron and he was skint in the bar that we managed to get AA together, right? But his venture wound up in a lawsuit and had bogged down completely. The proceeding was shot through with much hard feeling and controversy. Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange place, discredited and almost broke. Still physically weak and sober, but a few months. He saw that his predicament was dangerous. He had wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom, with a question mark. One dismal afternoon, he paced in a hotel lobby, wondering how his bill to be paid. That was the Mayflower Hotel. At one end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened to an attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. In there, he would find companionship and release. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an old acquaintance, and would have a lonely weekend. Of course he couldn't drink, but why not sit, hopefully, at a table with a bottle of ginger ale before him? After all, had he not been, and I highlighted his next few lines down to bar, had he not been sober 6 months now, perhaps he could handle, say, 3 drinks. No more. Fear gripped him, because then Bill realised that every time he got drunk, right? He said he was on thin ice. Again, it was the old insidious insanity and that first drink. With a shiver, he turned away and walked to the lobby, to the church directory. Music, gay chatter still floated from the bar. But what about his responsibilities, his family and the men who would die because they would not know how to get well? Oh yes, there's other alcoholics, he said. There must be such many in this town, He would phone a clergyman, his sanity returned, and he thanked God selecting the church at random from the directory. He stepped in the booth and had lifted the receiver, and this was where he phoned Reverend Walter Tunks, the guy he phoned. His call led to a clergyman, led him presently to a certain resident of the town, who, though formerly had been able and respected, was then nearing the dear of alcoholic despair, as Dr. Bob. It was the usual situation, home in jeopardy, wife ill, children distracted and bills in arrears and standing damaged. He had a desperate desire to stop, and I underline this, but saw no way out. Dr. Bob was going to the Oxford group, but he didn't understand what the problem of alcoholism was. He knew about God, but he didn't know about the problem. For he had earnestly tried many adventures of escape. Painfully aware of being somehow abnormal, the man did not fully realise, underline this, what it meant to be alcoholic, which is what Bill sat with him in the room and described, we're going to read about. When our friend related his experience, the man agreed that no amount of willpower he might muster could stop him drinking for long. The spiritual experience he conceded was absolutely necessary, underline that, absolutely necessary. But the price seemed high upon the basis suggested, which when Bill suggested the program. He told how he lived in constant worry about those who might find out about his alcoholism. He had, of course, the familiar family obsession that a few knew of his drinking. Why, he argued, should he lose the remainder of his business, only to bring about still more suffering to his family by foolishly admitting his plight to people from whom he made his livelihood? He would do anything, he said, but that. So on page 58, it says in page 58, as some of these we bought, we thought we could find an easier, softer way. So when Bill took Bob for the program and he got to what we're just going to talk about making amends, Dr. Bob didn't want to make amends because he was fearful that the town would find out that he was an alcoholic and they wouldn't come to him for when they were sick. And he got drunk. Finally, when he finally came back from this American convention that he came back from, he finally realised that he needed to go and make amends. So Dr. Bob went to do an operation. He was drunk. And Bill gave him a few bottles of beer in the morning to stop the shakes. Dr. Bob went and made an operation on a patient and never came back. So Bill waited for 5 hours in the car park for Dr. Bob and he never turned up. So Bill Wilson went back to Dr. Bob's house and sat with his wife Anne and said, you know, I think he's good. I think he's drunk. I gave him a couple of bottles of ale this morning to settle his nerves and so he could do his operation. He's not come back. And I might tell us in a minute, Dr. Bob returned home at midnight. He'd gone out and made his amends. He never took another drink from that day onwards because that was the stuff that he was balking on. That was the stuff that he didn't want to do, which is what we're doing now. We don't want to do it, right? But he finally made the amends and he never took another drink. Being intrigued, however, he invited our friend to his home. Sometime later, just as he thought he was getting control of his liquor situation, he went on a roaring bender. He went to an American medical convention. For him, this was a spree at the end of all sprees. He said that he would have to face his problem squarely, that God might give him the mastery. One morning, he took the bull by the horns and set out to tell those he feared what his troubles had been. He found himself surprisingly well received and known that many knew of his drinking. Stepping into his car, he made the rounds of people which he'd hurt. He trembled as he went about, for this might mean ruin, particularly to a person in his line of business. At midnight, he came home exhausted, but very happy, and underlined his next sentence. He has not had a drink since. And we shall see that he now means a great deal to his community. And the major liabilities of 30 years of hard drinking have been repaired in full. But life was not easy for the two friends. Plenty of difficulties presented themselves. Both saw they had to keep spiritually active. One day they called up on a head nurse at a local hospital. They explained their needs and inquired that she had a first-class alcoholic prospect. This was Bill Dotson, AA number 3, or the man in the bed, picture that you see. She replied, yes, we've got a corker. He's just beating up a couple of nurses. Goes off his head completely when he's drinking. But he's a grand chap when he's sober. Though he's been here 8 times in the last 6 months. Understand he was once a well-known lawyer in town. but now we've got him strapped down tight. He was a prospect, all right. By the description, none too promising. The use of spiritual principles in such cases might not well be so understood as it is now. But one of the friends said, put him in a private room and we'll be down. 2 days later, a future fellow of Alcoholics Anonymous stared glassily at the strangers beside his bed. Who are you fellows? And why this private room? I was always in a ward before. Said one of the visitors, we're going to give you treatment for alcoholism. Hopelessness was written large on the man's face as he replied, oh, but that's no use. Nothing would fix me, I'm a goner. The last 3 times I got drunk on the way home from here, I'm afraid to go out from the door and I can't understand it, right? The baffling feature, page 23, that is, right? For an hour, the two friends told him of their drinking experiences over and over. He would say, that's me, I drink like that. The man in the bed was told of the acute poisoning from which he suffered, how it deteriorates the body of an alcoholic that warps his mind. There was much talk about the mental state preceding that first drink. This is step one. Yes, that's me, said the sick man. The very image. You fellows know your stuff all right. But I don't see what good it will do. You fellows are somebody I was once, but I'm a nobody now. From what you tell me, I know more ever that I can't stop. At this, both of the visitors burst into laugh. He said the future fellow Alcoholic Anonymous, damn little to laugh about that I can see. The two friends spoke of their spiritual experience. I told him about the course of action they carried out. He interrupted. I used to be strong for the church, but that won't fix it. I prayed to God on hangover mornings and swore that I'd never touch another drop, but by 9 o'clock, I'll be bored as an owl. Next day, the prospect was more receptive. He'd been thinking it over. Maybe you're right, he said. God ought to be able to do anything. Then he added, he sure didn't do much for me when I was trying to fight this booze racket alone. On the third day, the lawyer gave his life and care and direction to his creator, step three. He said he was perfectly willing to do anything necessary. His wife came scarcely daring to be hopeful, though she had thought she had saw something different about her husband already. He had begun to have a spiritual experience. That afternoon, he put his clothes on and walked from the hospital a free man. He entered a political campaign, making speeches, frequenting men's gatherings in all sorts of places. Staying up all night, he lost the race by only one narrow margin. He had found God, and in finding God, he had found himself. That was June 26th of the dose, 1935. He never drank again. Bill Dodson, AA number 3. He too had become a respected and useful member of his community. He has helped other men recover and is a power in a church from which he was long absent. So now you see there were 3 alcoholics in that town, who now felt they had to give others what they had found to be sunk. After several failures, they found another, a fourth turner. This was Ernie G. He came from an acquaintance who had heard of the good news. He proved to be a devil-may-care young fellow whose parents could not make out whether he wanted to stop drinking or not. They were deeply religious people, but much shocked by their son's refusal to have anything to do with the church. He suffered horribly from his sprees, but it seemed as if nothing could be done for him. He consented, however, to go to the hospital, where he occupied the very room recently vacated by the lawyer. He had 3 visitors, and after a bit, he said, the way you fellows put this spiritual stuff makes sense. I'm ready to do business. I guess the old folks were right after all. So one more was added to the fellowship. All of this time, our friend in the lobby hotel incident, Bill, remained in that town. He was there 3 months and now returned home, leaving behind his first acquaintance, the lawyer, and a devil-may-care chap. These men had found something brand new in life. They knew that they must help other alcoholics if they were to remain sober, underlined that. They knew they had to help others. That motive became secondary It was transcended by the happiness they had found in giving themselves for others. They shared their homes, their slender resources, and gladly devoted their spare hours to fellow sufferers. They were willing by day or by night to place a new man in the hospital and visit him afterward. They grew in numbers. They experienced a few distressing failures, but in those cases they made an effort to bring the man's family into a spiritual way of living, thus relieving much worry and suffering. A year and 6 months later had passed, and these three had succeeded with seven more. Seeing much of each other, scarce an evening passed that someone's home did not have shelter, a little gathering of men and women. Happy in their release and constantly thinking how they might present their discovery to some newcomer. In addition to these casual get-togethers, it became customary to set apart one night a week for a meeting to be attended by anyone or everyone interested in a spiritual way of life. That became an open meeting, right? That's where open meetings come from. Aside from the fellowship and sociability, the prime object was to provide a time and a place where new people might bring their problems, right? This is where the meetings developed. Outsiders became interested. One man and his wife placed their large home at the disposal of this strangely assorted crowd. This was T. Henry and Clarice Williams, right? This couple has since become so fascinated that they've dedicated their home to the work. Many a distracted wife has visited the house to find loving and understanding companionship among women who knew her problem, to hear from the lips of their husbands what they had happened to them, and to be advised how their own wayward mate might be hospitalized and approached when he next stumbled. Many a man yet dazed from this hospital experience stepped over the threshold of that home into freedom. I underlined it, into freedom. Many an alcoholic who entered there came away with an answer. He succumbed to that gay crowd inside who had laughed at their own misfortunes and understood his, impressed by those who visited him at the hospital. He capitulated entirely when later in the upper room of this house, he heard the story of some man whose experience today closely tallied his own. The expression on the faces of the women, that indefinable something in the eyes of the men, the stimulating electric atmosphere of the place conspired to let him know that there's been heaven at last. The very practical approach of his problems, the absence of intolerance of any kind, the informality, the genuine democracy, the uncanny understanding to which these people had were irresistible. He and his wife would have elated the thought of what they could do for some stricken acquaintance and his family. This couple were part of the Oxford Group. That's where Dr. Bobber met them. And from the Oxford Group, that Henry and his wife, Clarice Williams, dedicated their one room in their house to AA from the Oxford Group, right? They knew they had a host of new friends. It seemed they had known these strangers anyway. They had seen the miracles and one was to come to them. They had visioned the great reality of their loving and all-powerful creator. Now this house would hardly accommodate its weekly visits, for they now number 60 to 80 years of old. Alcoholics have been attracted from far and near, from surrounding towns. Families drive long distances to be present. A community 30 miles away has 15 fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous, and being a large place, we think that someday its fellowship will number many hundreds. That's Cleveland, by the way. But lifelong Alcoholics Anonymous is more than attending gatherings to visit the hospitals, cleaning up old scrapes, helping to settle family differences. You can highlight this bottom paragraph, actually. Helping to settle family differences, explaining to the disgruntled son to his irate parents, lending money and securing jobs for each other when justified. These are everyday occurrences. No one is too discredited or sunk too low to be welcomed cordially. If he means business, underline that. Are they willing? So when we're helping others, that we spoke about this weeks ago, they have to be willing, right? Social distinctions, petty rivalries and jealousies, these are laughed out of countenance. Being wrecked in the same vessel, being restored and united under one God, with hearts and minds attuned to the welfare of others, The things which matter so much to some people no longer signify how much to them. How could they? Under only slightly different conditions, the same thing is taking place in many eastern cities, which was New York. In one of these, there's a well-known hospital for the treatment of alcoholic and drug addiction. It's his town's hospital where Bill went. 6 years ago, one of our numbers was a patient there. Many of us felt, for the first time, the presence of the power of God within its walls. We are greatly indebted to the doctor in attendance there, to Silkworth, for he, although it might prejudice his own work, has told us of his belief in ours. Every few days, this doctor suggests our approach to one of his patients, understanding his work. And next I wrote Bill's story, because this is where Silkworth learned from alcoholism. He can do this with one eye to selecting those who are willing and able to recover on a spiritual basis. Many of us former patients go there to help. Then in this eastern city, there are informal meetings such as we've described to you. Where you may see these scores of members, there are the same fast friendships. There's the same helpfulness to one another as you find among our Western friends. This is good in a bit. This is a good bit of travel between East and West. We could foresee a great increase in helping and this helpful interchange. Someday we hope that every alcoholic, underline that, not some, because AA is for every alcoholic, right? Who journeys will find a fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous at its destination. To some extent, this is already true. Some of us are salesmen and go about. Little clusters of twos and threes and fives among us have sprung up in other communities through contact with our two largest cities, centers. Those of us who travel drop in as often as we can. This practice enables us to lend a hand and at the same time avoiding certain alluring distractions on the road, about which any traveling man can inform you. Thus we grow, and so can you. Though you may be one man, but one man in this book in your hand, we believe and hope it will contain all you need to begin. We know what you are thinking. You are saying to yourself, I'm a jittery and I'm a lot. I couldn't do that. But you can. You forget, and I've highlighted these next few lines. You forget. You've now just tapped into a source of power much greater than yourself. To duplicate with such backing, which we have accomplished, is only a matter of willingness, patience, and labor. We know of an AA member who was living in a large community, St. Parkhurst. He had lived there but a few weeks when he found the place that probably contained more alcoholics per square mile than any city in the country. This was only a few days ago. And in this writing of 1939, the authorities were much concerned. He got in touch with a prominent psychiatrist who had undertaken certain responsibilities for the mental health of the community. The doctor proved to be able and exceedingly anxious to adopt any workable method of handling the situation. So he inquired. What did our friend have on the ball? Our friend proceeded to tell him, and with such good effect that the doctor agreed to test among his patients with certain other alcoholics from a clinic which he now attends. Arrangements were made with the chief psychiatrist of a large public hospital to select still others from a stream of misery from which flows from that institution. They carried a message, basically. So our fellow worker will soon have friends galore. Some of them may sink and perhaps never get up. But if our experience is a criterion, more than half of those approached will become fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. When a few men in this city have found themselves and discovered the joy of helping others to face life again, there will be no stopping until everyone in that town has had this opportunity to recover if he can and will. Still, you say, I will not have the benefit of contact with you write this book. We cannot be sure. God will determine that. So you must remember that your real reliance is upon him. He will show you how to create the fellowship you crave. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we only know a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit what you haven't got. And I highlight now from see to it, down to join us. The last part. See to it that your relationship with him is right. And great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Underline that. Fact is a truth. If you're spiritually fit and you carry the message, it's a fact, right? Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. That's 1, 2, and 3. Admit your faults to him and your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past, which is 4 through to 9. And give freely of what you find and join us, which is 10, 11, and 12. We should be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit. And you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.